What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Business Beyond Performance podcast. My name is Matt Powell. With me is my amazing co-host, Joe Stile.
Thanks, man.
Oh, man. Showing off the guns. I love it, baby. Absolutely love it. You're looking good, man.
Thanks, man.
Got that summer bod going on.
Hey, man. In a couple of weeks, I'm up in the mountains in Colorado for 3 days, putting some time in. So, you know, I better be tight and right. Otherwise, I ain't going to survive 14,000 feet.
Hey, I'm just excited to hear the stories. You coming back, something about bears, I'm sure. I'm just excited. I'm excited to see how it goes.
Yeah, no. Well, I'm going with the best guy there is to go with, Luke Bradford from Kansas, guy I used to share my office with. So fortunate enough to have a great buddy. So we're going out into the woods. We're going to hike some mountains, finish some things we didn't finish the last time we were out there due to just not knowing what we were doing. So, you know, looking forward to 4 days at an average height of 12,000 feet.
It's going to be a good time, man. Plus, you get to see Joe Rizzo, one of our favorite veterans and Army active duty member still. Sorry, soon to be veteran. So give him a big hug for me for sure.
No, I will. And I'll make sure that when we put this episode out, I'll send it to him and just put a little smiley face with it.
You're going to have to. So the other person I'm excited to talk about is Vince Andrich. This dude is an absolute legend in the field of supplements. This guy's been around way back even when Metrics was coming up. He knew Joe Weider. He knew everybody coming up as they started to develop not only the muscle fitness magazines plus bodybuilding.com. Like I said, Metrics was a huge thing. Obviously, you and I grew up with that in the early 90s with the 4-page kind of fold ads for creatine just as that was becoming a real thing, plus the Metrics power bars back when they were still sponsoring World's Strongest Man even, which I know has kind of been influx and out of flux, but we'll leave that alone for another time. Vince now works at Stepani Labs and Stepani Supplements, and he goes through and does all of their advertising, plus helps them figure out their consultation of where they want to go and where they want to build the brand. And that's one of the coolest things we talked about today was, how do you decide, you know, especially for those younger people wanting to build their own thing, how do you decide what is your best path? What is the best way to go? What is your best market? So I was super excited to have him on, and this is a lot of stuff that I didn't know much about. Joe, I know you had previous experience in the world of ready-to-drinks and consumables, so what did you think?
So one, Vince is a legend, and he's a guy who I had never met, but I knew by name from the magazines, from the industry, from word of mouth. So I was fortunate enough to work in the CPG nutrition space, the consumer packaged goods and nutrition, sport nutrition side for about 18 months. And I was able to be at a pretty high level real quick for the company I worked at. So I was able to kind of jump in real fast to some of the big players because we were out there. So he's a guy who I was always actually trying to get a hold of because I wanted to, like, you know, as cliche as it is, pick his brain. I mean, the man's been around for what, almost damn near 30 years, and he's been on the most successful things. So it's not like he was just there doing stuff and saw people. Like, he was the guy for like 30 years, and he still is. So that was where I just thought it was really awesome to have him, because again, he's a humble guy who took the time, but he's one of the most successful guys. So again, if you're in that nutrition space, if you're in that food world and you're trying to look at, you know, how do I come up with a product? How do I do stuff? How do I market? How do I get in? And Vince's name isn't on your list of people to call and talk to. You're just not going to make it.
100%. The other really cool story that he brings up is how he met Sylvester Stallone. And I don't know how many of the younger generation is going to remember this, but Sly put out his own supplement line back in, what was that, 2002, 2001, somewhere around there.
Somewhere in the early 2000s. The Instone puddings, still a personal favorite.
Classic. Absolute classic. So as he went through, he was actually Sly's number one guy, and he was helping him make the transition to the supplement line. And it's just interesting to see how he goes into that story, how he met Sylvester Stallone, how he was able to work with him, what they were able to do well, what he looks back at now and realizes were the mistakes and the things that kind of held him up on the back end. So it's just an incredible man to talk to. I absolutely loved it. Without any further delay, let's do Vince Andrich, episode number 11.
I want to say thanks to our sponsor, Strive. Nicole and the team at Strive have done what I think helps kind of close the gap in wearable technology by being able to measure the actual muscular effort or the internal load of the body and comparing that to all the external load, you know, speed, distance, G-force that someone is producing. You actually are able to see not only what someone did, but how they did it. And that how has been the secret sauce and the missing piece in my mind. It's kind of where the wearable technology needs to go. It's the integration of multiple monitoring modalities to derive a holistic measure of what someone did and then how they did it, which at every level, from the sport coach to the strength coach to the athletic trainer, even to the administrators and the insurance billing and understanding why and what's happening when people get injured. It's literally a revolutionary thing. So definitely something you should look into. Wearstrive.com. That's WEARSTRIVE.com. Want to give an unofficial sponsorship shout out to Dr. Jim Stepani, Dr. Tim Sheets, and Vince Andrich, the later of the two who have both already been on the podcast, and JYM Supplement Science. So JYM, kind of like Jim with a J, Supplement Science.
Yeah, absolutely. Great product. Something that we definitely have been used quite a bit over the years. Great protein. And the thing that we both really appreciate about them is they actually have research behind everything. Dr. Tim Sheet, as you mentioned, who's been on the podcast before, went through and explained how they actually do the research, unlike most companies in the supplement industry. And they actually give out information that makes sense, and they help people decide what supplements are best for them, even if it doesn't mean they go with their company. But they prove time and time again that science and the research behind it are the reason why these supplements work. And then they give those, you know, empowering statements and empowering movements to help these people make the best decisions for them and their individual needs as a consumer.
No, and again, never hurts that they're UConn guys either. but no, definitely JYM Supplement Science. Check them out. Again, it's top quality products with the research to support them. And if it's a brand you're not familiar with, it's something you should be familiar with, either yourself or your athletes.
For sure. Joe, if there is one unofficial sponsor throughout our entire podcast, all the episodes we've done so far, I think we're up to like 15 by now. Who would you choose?
Well, Matt, we're actually up to 19. And the reason I know is because I write it all down in my Rocket Book. Right. So I got the little one right here. I got the full size one on the desk. Right. It's something I use every day in my personal and professional life. It's been a tool that the last 2 years since I found it has, you know, from an efficiency standpoint, has changed the way I take notes, has changed the way my crappy handwriting can be digitized into, you know, typed Word documents for ease of use to send in emails and everything. So I would highly recommend, if you don't know what Rocketbook is, check them out, get one, use it for a few months. I guarantee it'll change your life.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Great to have another awesome guest on the show. This man has worked for Metrex. This man's worked for Weider back when they had their own supplement industry. This man now works for Jim Stepani and the supplement company that he's put together over at Jim Army. Oh, man, I am super excited to have Vince on here. This guy has been around the supplement company from the distribution side, from the marketing side, from every component you could possibly think of, especially on the business side. So, Vince, thank you so much for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
It's an honor, Matt. Thank you. Appreciate it.
No problem. So I don't want to completely gloss over your entire career, because the first time you told it to me when we spoke, I was just blown away at some of the places you've been. Can you give us like a 30,000 foot view and just kind of give us some of the breakdown, some of the highlights?
I guess I could try and do that. Yeah, it's hard to talk about yourself, but yeah, I started quite a long time ago. I was selling supplements pretty much out of my condo, and was going to do a retail store with a buddy of mine. We wound up being distributors, and it was 86 or 7. We incorporated end of 87, and we were a distributor, and our big so what was we had the Twin Lab brand. At that time, late 80s, they basically owned it. They really just got into sports nutrition about 1986, and they were growing like crazy. But a lot of your audience may not know, they cut their teeth in vitamins and minerals. And so there was a book in the 80s, early 80s, called Life Extension. They got the galleys of that book, and they basically copied all the formulas. And so they coined the term antioxidant. But a lot of the stuff you hear now, that came out of that book. That book changed my life. So that was an experience. So I was a distributor for sports supplements, and wound up, some of the names you might know now, we had Cytosport, which is Muscle Milk now. We had Champion Nutrition. We had Power Bar. We eventually got Weider, which is kind of another whole story. And so we were selling gyms and health food stores, and then we wound up selling a grocery store by accident through a friend. And that's how I met the people at Weider. So from there, our company, I guess, really, all of this is just really good fortune. So I met the guys at Weider because they were trying to figure out how this kid got their stuff in the supermarket. And because they had been trying, not that they weren't successful, they were, but then it didn't sell that great, right? So they had like their vitamin packs in there. And so then basically, we got introduced to like what they call a food broker network, which is how like Power Bar and these guys way back then got their stuff in the supermarket. So it was really a big learning. So I did some of that after that, and I represented Twin Lab, Weider, Champion, some other brands, Power Bar for a while. And then Weider called and hired me as the VP of sports nutrition. And so when I was there, Weider was, this is 95, end of 95, 1995. Weider had just gone public. And so people today may not know Weider. They know Weider magazines were Muscle and Fitness, Flex and Shape and all that. They may see Weider Weights, which is the same Weiders, right? That company was actually the Weider Weight Training or Equipment Company. That was sold right after I started distributing their supplements. That was the biggest part of their business. So they had publishing, weight training equipment, right? And cardio equipment, and the publishing, right? So then Weider, I was really lucky to be there at that time because we were buying brands. So we bought American Bodybuilding Science Foods, a brand called Holico. They were the biggest in the UK. So it was a really great learning experience about how companies buy brands for different reasons. They may clean them up. Like we bought American Bodybuilding for the distribution because they own the gyms. The products were okay. We made them better, but it was really, we were trying to buy the distribution piece. And then it wasn't part of my division, but we bought Shift Vitamins, which you now know like Omega Red on TV. That was a Weider company. And so that really, the Weider system is where I really learned how products are put together, the marketing and all the business side, because you had to present a business case inside Weider to actually get your project done. So sports nutrition part of the company, but they had a mass market division. They had they had juices, they had bars, they had every form factor that they made themselves, which is called being primary. So in that system, you really learn how to like run a business inside a business. So you have to go and make your argument. I want a new American Bodybuilding protein drink. You got to explain why, how much the market size is, why you need to do this. Are you doing it to block the competition? Are you doing it because it's a new flavor you need, or you're just trying to refresh the brand? So you have to put all that into a document that basically gets signed off by finance. So that was like one of the biggest learnings. So then I wound up getting recruited by Metrex USA. And so Metrex is an awesome brand, unbelievable brand. But they didn't have like as many systems that Weider did. You know, Weider, you know, started so many years prior. By the time I got there, and they were that big of a company, it was like an ocean liner, right? It was really big. Not that Metrex was small, but so we brought a lot of that product development system thinking to, I actually did that really in most of the places I've gone to, which is you're a supplement company, you sell products, so the product should be like the centerpiece. The executive should meet and make big decisions based on what product, where is it sold? What's the price point? Can we get the market? Right? And so that really learning, I know I'm not really answering your question. I'm giving you the long answer, but that's kind of how, you know, starting as a distributor, Weider looked at me as a different type of person. I wasn't just an employee. I was like a known entity. So if your audience is out there, you know, looking to build a brand or get into the business or just move up, I got really lucky. I was adopted because I was a customer of the Weider system. So when they looked at me and I said something like, well, if we can't sell this guy, he wouldn't buy our stuff before, because I wasn't really hot on their stuff. So when he says, maybe we should do this, maybe we should listen to him, right? So what I would say is, like, anybody building their career, you have to get adopted by someone in the organization, usually, to get your ideas even heard. Otherwise, it's kind of like you're a lame duck.
No, I love that. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I absolutely love that. And I love the way you're going with it, because, and you know, I've talked to us before, there's so much history to what you've been able to do. And people who don't know the Weider name, they need to go rent the movie Bigger, and they need to watch it, because it's an amazing breakdown. And obviously, you know the story way better than I do from working with his company, you know, and his lineage along the way. Because as you said, it's a family-owned company, or at least it was for a very long time. But that's an amazing history just to show how important systems and processes are, and how you went from one to the next and just built them up. Metrics, I'm sure Joe remembers opening up that magazine, seeing the 4-page split. I know you and I talked about this, Vince, and seeing what they were selling at the time and just what was huge. And this is nothing to gloss over, because these are amazing things, and I love hearing every aspect of it.
Yeah, I mean, I love this stuff. Like, first time we were jamming, it's like we could just keep talking. But I think a lot of these are, for your audience and your entrepreneurial guys, it's really a good learning. And, you know, you can, there's a certain level of intelligence you can get, or smart to get out of school. But really, I was really lucky because of the application I was able to learn. And some of these things, like being around Weider, where when you were running the sports, when you wanted to get a product done, you know, you had to present the business case, but you also had to go to, I had a brand manager or project manager that would show up at an R&D meeting. So all of this stuff, really, I didn't know it at the time. I was just getting the most incredible education. Like, so you're presenting a business case, and then if you have a bar, let's say, you would go to a product meeting with the R&D people that only work on bars. You have scientists that only work on bars, right? You have a project person that only works on bars, and they're working with your brand manager or assistant brand manager, right? And I would have, every Tuesday, we'd have product meetings. So I'd have to be at a capsule and tablet meeting because I had fat burners and whatever else, right? I'd be at a bar meeting, or someone did, because we had bars. We had Steel Bar. We had Tiger's Milk Bar. You guys probably know that, still around. Yeah. And we had drinks with American Bodybuilding. And we had powders, right? So you would go and learn these manufacturing things, the language at first, right? And then you start learning about lead times. You start learning about forecasting. You start learning that all how these pieces fit. And it really helped me, like, go to the next place. It's like, because after Metrics, it sold. So I was part of the team that was there. And then when we sold EAS, I'd known those guys. And a lot of people may not know when EAS was actually part of their heyday, Weider was making some of their items. Weider was making, they were making almost all the powder at GNC at one point. They were making some of EAS. They were making most of the vitamins at Walmart when I was there. It was too big. It was almost like I was getting money at lesson. It's like all of those moving parts is very difficult. It's like you're leaving the Earth's atmosphere and you're holding on because the G-force is just insane. So I got the EAS, and I got the great deal because they wanted me to write the supplement review, the 4th edition, and work on the publishing side. Because Joe had me write a few things, but I was really not really the writer guy. I wrote for Metrics, right? That was really great. But one of the first things that EAS had an issue with was their number one item, Myoplex. They didn't own the formulas, meaning they were getting the stuff done at co-packers and primarily one, and they didn't own what we call the flavor system, right? And so again, going back to the experience at Weider and even Metrics, at Metrics, we had our whole in-house R&D. We would make all of our own flavor systems, and we never let the manufacturer have it. We sent it in like the Coke formula. So we sent the flavor tech in, and if we wanted to buy proteins, or if the manufacturer bought the proteins on our behalf, all of it showed up at the co-packer. the co-packer did not know what our formula for flavor was. They could try to knock it off, right? But we had a relationship with the flavor company, or we did it in-house. One of the EAS, they have all this sales, and COO says, hey, I'm about to tell you, we don't own the formulas. I'm like, he goes, well, what would you do? And they came from another industry, because they were part of Bill Phillips had already sold part of the company. And so you gotta get some food scientists, and you gotta knock off your own product. And that's what we did. So one of my first jobs there was to go to different co-packers with a food scientist, and we knocked ourselves off, and we opened up three different co-packers, one in centrally located, one east west. And that was my crash course in basically leading a contract manufacturer that's trying to keep you hostage. So again, it was really lucky for me. So I had this other stuff I was learning, but all of a sudden they needed somebody, and I could raise my hand. Only because I was a place before that, right? And you don't really learn that in a book. Yeah. So that was really lucky.
That is insane. I don't think people understand listening right now just how crazy that is, that you had your biggest product, your biggest moneymaker. Everybody knows Myoplex. And you didn't even own the formula. You had to go in, steal your own formula, get a bunch of nerds like me who like dietetic stuff, break it down, and then rebuild it in order to keep selling it and keep making money.
Right. And then, that's another lesson really is the beauty of, for your audience that's, going to get into business. It's one thing was really good about, when Weider got to all those, they had all those tentacles, right? It was in part because they really kind of wanted to do it, and they had an opportunity. One of the reasons why they got into manufacturing is they wound up selling the weight training company to a firm in Salt Lake, and so they started buying factories there. So they're and your audience wouldn't remember this, but even before my day, Weider had all their stuff made by other people, and one manufacturer actually didn't meet label claim, and Joe got dinged for it, Joe Weider, the Weider brand. And it gave him a bad name for a while, right? And so that's one of the reasons why Joe said, I need to own my own factories. And so it was just kind of perfect timing because this company in Salt Lake, and there's a lot of manufacturing that happens in Salt Lake because there's a lot of multi-level marketing companies out there. So there's a lot of dietary supplements being made. But anyway, so Metrix, Dr. Conley was the product guy and, the formulator, but he knew to get an edge on somebody, he wanted his own R&D people. So he was always playing with stuff. If I did a bar and I reduced the carbs, if I wanted to put real MCT, C8 medium chain triglycerides in a product, because we had a brand called Anabolic Drive, which was based on a ketogenic diet. I think I might have told you, cyclical ketogenic diet in 98. And Conley was, it was great. We outlined a concept and Conley's he went to work, right? He's Stepani's the same way. You tell Stepani really comes up with the ideas, right? And then he fills in the blank. You could do some of that stuff with Scott Connolly and just bring up an idea. It's I have a great idea for that. What we're really going to do is, I don't know, 20 studies on C8s versus C10s or whatever. And maybe at some point I'll send you what that line looked like. It holds up. It's 22 years old, that line would have been today. And it was a ketogenic protein with spray-dried medium-chain triglycerides right on the protein and bars that were keto. And then the creatine product was creatine with 93 grams of dextrose, which was the study of the day. Steenge did the study. It was, 10.4 grams of creatine and 97 dextrose. And we basically copied the study. And we had a manual that said, hey, you keep your carbs low and then you cycle them in. And when you do, you can replenish with this creatine product. This is really cool, but I'm getting off track. But
no, you're good. You're good. I love hearing about stuff like that. It's awesome.
My point was going to be, a lot of these companies didn't delve into areas that they didn't have. They couldn't do better than outsourcing it. So Metrix has R&D and everything, but they outsourced the manufacturing, right? They would source the proteins and then have the men either send them in or have the co-packer buy them with oversight. EAS, they didn't even have a product process because it was really a marketing company. Bill was concerned with writing. He was a great marketer. But when Bill said, I want to do a new product, everyone was like, hey, what do you think, Bill? And there was no process. So it was really lucky when you add that process to such a strong company, it could just go crazy. You know, after EAS, I started really doing consulting. The most probably notable, I gave you a list. There's a bunch of brands that are still out there right now, most including GNC. The biggest one was a brand that Sylvester Stallone, or the most noteworthy, probably, right, for people. He had a brand called Insta.
We have to know about this. We have to hear about this. What was that like? It was such a big deal. It was such a big deal. He had the supplement line come out. He had the muscle magazine come out. He had everything come out at the exact same time. It was like one of the coolest product launches I remember in like probably high school or college sometime around then. It was amazing.
It was. I got contacted by an investment group that says, hey, they were in other investments. Matter of fact, after that, they've been investing in dietary supplements since Instone, which is Stallone's company. They launched Pop Chips and several others. So they this was their first foray into it. So me and a couple other guys, actually Pat Arnold's brother, the grandfather of Pro Hormones, John Arnold, and myself, and my dear buddy, one of the brightest guys in the industry, Ryan Hornbuckle, we were all asked to meet this group for a, we don't know who the investor is, and they wanted to buy Twin Laboratory. And so they said, hey, can you do an analysis on the good, the bad, the ugly of Twin Lab versus making an own brand? And we presented it and we said, well, we believe there's sales with Twin Lab. There's a lot of dead bodies, right? They were over distributed and da da da. At any rate, Tony Robbins was going to buy Twin Lab and he wound up buying it at one point under the name Ideasphere. So we're in a meeting and they go, okay, well, next meeting we're going to have the celebrity. And they said, it's Sylvester Stallone. Because they said it was a celebrity. And then, it was the craziest thing. The first time we met him, he was great. I mean, he was very, for his stature, I couldn't say he wasn't. He's like, considering the people that are on like Insta-famous now and stuff, for where that guy was in life, very humble. He cannot be humble, but in general, very down to earth. Very, very down to earth. And remember, you know, he wanted new supplements because he was involved, not a much, but he was a metrics guy. And Bill Phillips, you know, had him in body for body of work. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Yep, absolutely.
He sees him at Griffith Park because he was an EAS guy too. You know, he didn't want his name on stuff, but he was connected. And so his whole thing was like, hey, you know, I think I can do a supplement coming now because he didn't think his acting career was going any further. This is before Expendables. This is for, Balboa, right? It was Rocky Six, wasn't it? I think Rocky Six, right? And he couldn't get the rights to Rocky Six or it was tied up, and same with Rambo. So we're doing this, and he had the Contender. Remember the Contender? Mm-hmm. The show. So I had the Contender, and this is all like falling in place. I'm like, this is gonna be great. He's super nice. A little dicey with a celebrity, right? Because you know, most marketing books are right when they say it's dicey, right? I think we're at a point right now where you know the personality can really drive it, right? But back in the day, you know, you have a guy that would have a scandal and it would ruin your brand, but they didn't have a direct connection with the audience, like Jim does. Jim Sapani, you know, he looks the part. He is the part. He's got the education, but he backs it up with what he does every day. He lives it, and he's talking to consumers himself. He doesn't have to be in an ad, right? It's a totally different day. But Stallone was very easy to work with for me, anyway. He had his issues with a couple other people, but truth be told, his acting career. Toward the end of the first year, he got Rocky Six, and he was editing. And there was an investment group that was going to buy into Instone and in Promax Bar. Remember Promax Bar? And they decided to fail because Stallone was really, he was so focused on acting. And that piece really took off and the brand really wound down. And so that's really the story on that. I think he probably thought he could do it with just him, right? We started bringing other people in. But, you know, at his age, I mean, he looked amazing. But a lot of people looked at it like, Sly and the Supplements. You know, and what we say on this side, and Mike McElane, you know, co-owner of Gym Supplement Science, we talk about all the time, it's like, some people are just too on the nose. It's almost too obvious that they would sell supplements. Arnold's another one. A lot of people don't know Arnold had a brand in Germany. It lasted about 9 months. It was marketed by one of the biggest outfits in Germany, right? And it failed. And I only heard the story when we had Stallone in Germany for FIBO. And one of our distributors out there goes, yeah, you know, these guys, I go, who these guys? This is all stars. I go, they're muscle guys. They're about as big. He goes, did you know they had a supplement brand, you know, with Arnold? It just doesn't go. Because it's almost too contrived, right? So, yeah, that was that. And, you know, doing a lot of other consulting. Then, you know, it was a couple years later, I joined Quest when they were early on. I don't know if I mentioned that to you. I was a strategy guy for Quest with you. So learned a lot there. Really smart guys at that organization.
So Vince, let me jump in for a sec. You, again, part of the thing when we have people like yourself speak, you're giving an answer and you're talking, but you're giving about 50 other follow-up questions. No, it's great. So it's like, how many rabbit holes do we want to go down? Because You've given us so many. So I'm actually going to go back to one of my first notes. For anyone small time, right? I got a bunch of questions for you, but small time entrepreneur, you know, trying to get into the business, what are kind of the top two or top three things? So, you know, you referenced some terms, co-packer, distribution, all these things. You know, do you own your recipes or to someone else? Yeah. So what would you say to the person who, you know, the 23-year-old post-college, I have an idea, I'm going to change the world in the nutrition space. What should you know before you do anything?
Well, when you're starting out, you usually, if you would look back in time, you probably wouldn't do it. Is this the same, right? If I knew what I knew now, I would probably but a lot of these things are solvable. I mean, first with you're starting, you should say, like, do I have a product that is needed or different enough, right? And second thing is, can I speak to consumers about it? They really kind of go hand in hand. Right? How am I going to reach people? Now, today, anyone can reach people, but will your messenger resonate? Right? Now, you could go get people to advocate for you, right? That's why we have, you know, we have brand ambassadors and stuff like that. But you really have to have a product that you believe can solve a problem, or it's a better product for a use case than what's already out there. And some things aren't even that, they're not even really that revolutionary. For example, BSN had Nitrix, right? Which is their answer to NO2. And so one day they're talking, because I know a couple guys that were inside there, and they decided to put creatine and stimulants in a powder and make NO explode. Who couldn't have thought of that? But it was brilliant. So they took what people were taking as NO2, which is kind of a category at the time, but it was, didn't really hold up. And then they added other ingredients that you could actually feel, right? You know, creatine is going to work if you keep taking it. You know that caffeine and other stimulants are going to do something, right? And then, so it made a better use case for this nitric oxide category, and it basically embedded pre-workout, which was dominated previously by diet pills and energy pills, pretty much, right? So it doesn't seem like genius, but it was for the time, right? So does your product answer, solve a problem? And now, there's a lot of things that are really, really, derivative. But for example, when Jim came out with their brand, he's the guy that had the authority, the background, the voice, and also recognized that, wait a minute, most of these products you're getting, you don't even know what you're getting because they're all buried in a concentrated
proprietary,
right? Which, I remember I was at Metrex. Well, before I got to Metrex at Weider, we actually trademarked Truth and Protein because we were going to list, and we actually did, and the brand was Metaform. We listed the amount of proteins like Jim does in the product, right? This is how many glutamine peptides, 10 grams of glutamine peptides, this much micellar casein, this much milk peptides. Then I changed jerseys to go to Metrex, and Metrex was selling witchcraft, right, at the time. It was metamycin, this magical protein, right? So it's very interesting. So we kind of switched gears to the emotional sale, which was a great product. The metamycin, that protein was amazing, right? But no one really knew what was in it. So it was a magic sauce. But Jim recognized the fact that I need to pull a curtain down. Why would I be hiding? Because I'm going to load this thing up with what works, right? Mm-hmm. But it's the product, and will the story of the product and the messengers actually get through?
Yeah. No, Vince, that goes to your point. When you were talking about brands, the celebrity, and it's kind of contrived. And again, I've never met the guy. I don't know him. But Ronnie Coleman was one that first came to my head. He's right. Got the Yeah Buddy pre-workout. Again, it's great marketing. It fits the thing. But you see Ronnie Coleman with something, and you're like, okay, like that's just money. Is this even good? And again, it maybe is. I have no idea. I don't mean to shit on anyone. Purely referencing it as the perception of a buyer. That's what I thought, and it made perfect sense in line with what you were saying. The one question I have for you is, given your experiences in the industry, working with Quest, right? I've used Quest as an example for other companies I've worked with in the CPG and nutrition space. Have a foundation, have pillars you build your company on in terms of, what's your ethos, what's your philosophy, why, yes, you're making money by selling a product. Your product is in nutrition in this case, but what do you stand for?
Right.
And again, you can go into that if you want, but compare that to the people who are the flashes in the pan, who are all flash, no cash. I always would joke with some of my buddies, being a former athlete and being educated in the space. Well, what can I go to GNC and get me? And I'm like, just go buy the shiniest thing with the biggest dude and the chick with the best rack, because right. It's great marketing, but it ain't gonna do shit. So.
Right.
What's the, and again, I'm kind of throwing five or six things at you. What are the goods, like a Quest, in my opinion, there's a core philosophy and there's a reason they did stuff versus.
That was our ethos. Never break. You get up early and you get it done.
Yeah. Versus brands. And again, I don't want to name anybody particular. If you do, or you know something, feel free. Who were that all flash, no cash, and the difference, what's your take on that in this industry where there seems to be a lot of the all flash, no cash, and not many people like Stepani, people right. like Quest?
Yeah, I mean, the philosophy, the ethos is like, why are you really doing this? Jim's ethos is, I believe in supplements, but the only way they're going to benefit you is if you know what's in them, and we also know what those ingredients do. And so there's an efficacious dose level, right? And that's the foundation of it, right? He actually has the five pillars of supplementation, right? Which is the ingredient, the dose, the form, the synergy, and the timing, mm-hmm. right? So each product is formulated like that, right? The flash in the pan, there's a couple ways to look at it. And
if you have any good stories, feel free.
Well, I mean, look, you guys may have heard the stories, but you know, Cybergenics was a thing. Remember, I don't know if you remember Cybergenics. It was a kit. It's like five items in a kit with a VHS tape with a really good cardio training and actually nutrition, only because it said don't eat after 8 o'clock, do cardio, I think, twice a day, and train with high intensity, right? The training program was way more valuable than supplements. They were pretty much not great. That's putting it lightly. But they got by for a while because if you did the program, you go saw something, right? The flash, though, is there's no repeat to that. Like people that took the supplements and really didn't do the program, they got nothing, right? Another company, which I have actually a lot of respect for, which people have talked bad about, which is, let's say, MuscleTech. So MuscleTech has the big bodybuilders, and and you could perceive it as their marketing is a big lie. And there's actually a book called All Marketers Are Liars. I don't know. I suggest you read it. Basically, the book thesis is this. Brands tell a story. How much of that story is true is indicative of how successful they're going to be. So, for example, in MuscleTech's case, they were selling, when they started, ephedra in hydroxycut. They were selling creatine and dextrose. They were selling a meal replacement. And they were selling, NitroTech. The reason it was NitroTech, it was better than whey protein because there was, if you took, I think it was 2 servings, it was 24. I think if you took 3 servings a day, there's like 3 grams of creatine per serving. So their marketing was, it's 2,400% better than whey. Well, of course it was. There's creatine in it. So they were testing people on their vertical and their bench press and all that. And so, of course, it was better than whey. So when they had an 18-year-old boy look at Jay Cutler, was it a lie? Maybe. But if they took ephedra, trained, took creatine, took a meal replacement or upped their protein, they made gains. So was it a lie? Not really, mm-hmm. Kind of, right? It was hyperbole. So sometimes these brands can kind of get by with a more hype because the products, they're not earth-shattering, but they're good, right? And that's one of the things with dietary supplements, or sports supplements, is that there's work involved. If you get somebody to do the work, there's one reason why I love being with Jim Supplement Science, because Jim teaches people how to train and how to eat. And the supplements are unbelievable. You put all those together and you got results, right? Even any one of them taken alone, you're gonna get something. But primarily, if you don't have the exercise back drop, which is one of the things when I was at Quest, because they wanted to start drifting to like, we're gonna be craft foods. And like, you don't ever wanna be craft. Like, we want to be big like that. I go, you can be big like that, but don't lose your fitness anchor. Because remember, those people adopt a lifestyle. Your products fit a lifestyle equals more consumption and a better result. Yeah. I want people to eat a Quest bar thinking it's healthy and being active because my product looks better.
Yeah. Well, you referenced the Stepani's 5 pillars of supplementation, but the Synergy one, it is, to your point, it's nutrition and it's training and it, like, there's synergy not only in how the supplement works, but there's synergy in how, if you're doing all of these things, one thing I think you hit on and we referenced with proprietary and all the kind of stuff, and there's goods and bads to that. I shouldn't say it's still prevalent. It is and it isn't. What's your take on the nutrition space and people putting things they shouldn't into products? I personally remember I was in college, Zions. I don't know if they're still around. I think they're only around now as like an energy drink or something.
Right.
But I remember buying, going to the GNC or the vitamin shop, whatever I went to, you know, I had like $60 in my pocket. And it was on sale, and the guy was like, look, this stuff is great. It's selling hot. Like, everyone loves it. You know, they sponsor the UFC. And I remember being like, oh, shit. Like, okay. Like, whatever. I didn't know any better. And I bought it and I took it. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I haven't really changed anything, but the only thing I changed is my protein powder. And all of a sudden, I'm a little bigger, faster, stronger. I don't quite know if this is just protein powder. So I look on the back and it's got 5 or 6 proprietary things. And then come to find out a couple years later, and again, I don't mean to misquote this, but it was a couple years later, they actually got sued or they got closed or something because they were putting pro-hormones and precursors and all kinds of crazy shit, whether it was intentional or not, because I think they were batch manufacturing at a co-packer who was doing multiple things on the lines and the run times weren't getting cleaned right. I don't know where the issue came from. But I think they got shut down because there was shit in the stuff. So what are your thoughts on all of that kind of things within this industry?
Well, I mean, for something for that like that to really happen on purpose, mm-hmm. which it could have, because there's, you know, a manufacturer worth its weight would never, ever, ever put a label on a product that they did not know what was in the bottle. That's one, number one. Okay. If something gets in there and it's either not on the label or it's mischaracterized on the label, then both parties have a problem.
Yep.
Right? You know, there was some of these guys that were doing the EMAA after the fact, not after the first set of warnings. And one of the major guys had his own factory. So he's basically, he knows what's in it and he's not putting it on the label, right? But my manufacturers would never do that. It would, because it's their butt, right? So it can happen. A lot of times they bury things in there and they use a different name, right? So creatine has a chemical name. NitroCheck had it in there forever and never disclosed it until, you know, we exposed it in Muscle Media magazine. We're like, yeah, of course you've got better gains. You got 8 grams of creatine if you took it 3 times a day, right? Here's the chemical name. And so that was like the old way of kind of spiking things. I'm not sure what Zions did, but they could have put creatine in it. It's pretty cheap for you to get a 10 grams of creatine in a day or 8, right? And after a few, you're like, yeah, I'm a little bigger.
Yeah.
Right? And that was one of the secrets of NitroCheck. People were like, oh, I'm making gains, right? And you up anybody's protein, usually, that isn't really getting them up much, and then you give them something like creatine in their weight training, like, they think it's magic. Right? So that stuff goes on. You know, I don't really pay attention too much of it anymore, but there's some outliers. We haven't seen a lot since Jim cleaned up the industry with the protein spiking, which was going on. But there was a couple manufacturers trying to figure out how to get the nitrogen up without protein. The amino acid glycine and some other amino acids. So you could get a double dip when you did a analysis for nitrogen, right? It's not complete protein.
Yeah.
Basically.
That makes a lot of sense. So over the years, obviously you've been through a lot of companies, seen a lot of things. Do you see a lot of new products coming to market over the last 10, 15 years, or is it cyclical, just like training, where for a few years it's all about high intensity, next few years it's all about whatever strength sport is cool for that time, and then it keeps changing? So I guess that's my question.
There's things that are derivative. I mean, you know, BCAs were out there in the 80s, you know, 84, I think the first time I tried them with Unipro. And then all of a sudden, Extend, Cybation, you know, which was owned by a guy who owned the website called Bulk Nutrition. I don't know if you remember, go back in the day, Mike McCallis owned Bulk Nutrition, and he was basically selling other people's stuff. And then he was like, you know what, I'm going to just put branch chain amino acids in a bucket. I'm going to do it. So he basically reinvented something that was old. So it was new, again, kind of like NO Explode, right? It's like people took stuff like, you know, if you actually didn't have the stimulants in NO Explode, it's pretty similar to Twin Labs OptiFuel. And Champion Nutrition had a product called Metabolol, which was really, in my opinion, a very big, like a, it was a pivot point in the sports nutrition industry. It was about 1986 when I started like buying from distributors and selling product. That started like this escalation of some innovation where there was a little bit of science behind it, right? And the marketing got really slick. And so it wasn't just kind of like, they were getting ad agencies in there, right? And so you could just tell, and it's one of the things that nowadays, if it's too glossy, people go, okay, it's too glossy. But a little bit of polish to a consumer, it's like if you go to a trade show and you see your favorite brand and it's kind of like a janky booth and the people are eating and there's crumbs on the table, you don't have a great impression either. But if it's all buttoned up, you're like, wow, that's a pretty cool brand. They're better than I thought. So a lot of these things are kind of like, they are markers, so if you will, for what a brand is, right? So like, if you're going to go to an event, I'm digressing, but like, if you're going to go to an event, don't go super cheap, because that's what your brand is to people. Like, that's what we try to do here. We have the advantage of Jim, and he's super prolific and he resonates. But we do have some stuff that we polish up to make it more concise and to make it look like we put some effort in it. So consumers, I know I'm digressing too much, but like EAS, when they really kind of changed Muscle Media Magazine and they started putting guys that weren't just all really big, I don't know if you guys remember, mm-hmm. You know, they had guys that looked more like models, but they're more believable, like physique guys now.
Yep.
And there was a few people that were like, oh, look at that. That just looked kind of like, you know, I want a big guy. He was right. Most people wanted to look better, good in clothes, didn't want to have to buy special clothing, didn't want to look like they just had five meals. And so it really resonated. And also the photography and all that resonated to consumers going, how could they screw a Myoplex up when everything else looks good?
Yeah.
So if you're building a brand, remember that, right? If you look janky, sometimes people just think you're janky. And you may not be janky. You may be great.
Vince, you bring up an amazing point where in a previous work experience, I worked in a nutrition space in CPG. The product was a unicorn, truly. The science, everything, it worked. It was a lifetime movie in the story of how people came together and the invention and the technology. It was glorious.
Right.
But the unwillingness to commit to the level it needed to be at was the problem. It was joked in the industry, in both the athletic space and the general space, that it was like a knockoff, like it was like a garage brand. Because it never looked polished, it was never presented well. It was always the bastard stepchild. Was one time I was described it to as, hey man, that product is the truth, but it's like the bastard stepchild of the industry. Like, everyone knows it exists, but no one thinks it's real until they try it. But no one wants to try it because it looks like shit. So. 100%. It's this weird dynamic, and this company, again, phenomenal product, still lingers in limbo because they've never truly committed to going for it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of 100%. It's like I can't name how many times I've been around entrepreneur, formulator, whatever. It's like, yeah, it's the best product. No one's ever done it. Da, 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 da. We're the best one. I don't really need marketing. Mm-hmm. Right? In another lifetime, I was doing a lot of stuff for GNC. We were bringing these smaller brands in. And every brand, it was like they had a form letter. I have the best product. No one understands how I'm doing it. It's so different. Yada, 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 yada. It's like, you need to present that. Everyone thinks their product's great, usually. Right? It's like another something to cogitate on, which is every brand/founder that I've ran up against either says it or someone else says it, most likely they say, they're like, we're different. We're not like everyone else.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're right. You are. You wouldn't be at the table right now without being different. However, yeah. Are you going to be a one-hit record, or are you going to put another album out?
Yeah.
That's the true test.
If you're not...
When you said, who's flashing a pen? Can you put another record out? Can you put another product out?
If you're not evangelical about your own thing, no one's going to believe in it. So
right.
There's that level of you as the owner of the businessman of whatever you're doing as the side hustler, you know, whatever you are, if you're not the evangelical person who believes, you have to commit 100%.
Right.
No one else is gonna. But just because you do doesn't mean everyone else is gonna either. And that's one of those, one of the slogans I've heard, and it was funny because I used to ask, well, why is that still the case? Was a company that had been around for 6 or 7 years. And their thing, their pitch was they were the best kept secret in sports. And I was like, but if you're the best kept secret, then don't you not want to be a secret anymore? And it was like, so now to this day, 5 or 6 years after I heard that, their pitch to people is still, you're the best, they're the best kept secret in sports. But now people are like, you've been telling us that for 10 years. So are you a secret, or does no one even know you exist?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting too. Kind of another point on that is, some people, I don't want to put this. There are some people that they, and it's great to believe in your product, right? What I will also say is like when you're in it and you're part of a brand, I don't even look at it like a company. I do, but I have a different slant on it, which is if you're on a sports team, because there's a lot of certain brands at times, ownership or executives might say, yeah, we don't look at what anyone else is doing. We're like, that's great. However, if you were going to be playing a team next week, would you not look at them? Okay, we're in the marketplace, okay? You're going to either win or lose in the marketplace. You're not against yourself. So this whole idea that we're going to just be better and everything will work out, no, you still have to beat someone. This isn't on the golf course where you're just driving balls to see how you drive. You have to go against somebody, right? So you better pay attention because everyone else is trying to take your money, right? So you look at it, you look at your products, how you're presenting them and all that in the eyes of consumer who could choose someone else. You can laugh at another brand all you want, but you better take notice, right? If you're playing a team in the NFL that has an unbelievable running game, you're like, oh man, who runs anymore? It's like, you better pay attention.
So I'm going to chime in one last thing before I'm going to let Matt, I know he's itching to get in and I've been monopolizing the time. I apologize.
Oh, I have, sorry.
It's a great point you just made. And one I think that applies to everything. If you are trying to do anything business related and you are using your own personal bias as the decision-making mechanism, versus listening to the person who is going to be paying you, whether it's a product, a service, whatever industry, you are so lost because of course, and again, we just said, if you're the founder or the believer, you have to be angelical. The number one thing that I've worked with every executive I've ever worked with, if in any industry, if their focus is on their competitors and making fun of them because they're like, oh, well, that brand is shit or that product sucks or those people don't know what they're doing. We have all the answers. I know that business is never going to work no matter how much I help them.
100%.
If that person says, hey, you know what? I think that sucks, but they sell $100 million, so why does it work? Or something to that effect.
Yeah,
I know that company is going to win. So it's funny how you use that example, but it draws to me for this audience, it draws outside of just nutrition. It draws to anywhere if you're so focused like that in those two ways, one, you're pretty much always successful, and the other, you're pretty much always going to fail.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's easy to, like you said, you have to be your own biggest fan. You have to believe when you shouldn't even believe. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean you don't take note of what's going on. Right. And people can say, yeah, you know, I don't like this product, and, you know, they still do X, Y, Z. And it's like, I've even heard people discount, they don't do that great. It's like, I know the numbers, guy. Okay. Understand, this item is always at $23 to $19.99. They're occupying a space. It's a price point. So forget everything you want to knock about the formula and everything else. Their so what is different. Your claim to fame, or when a brand says, trust me, we're different. Yes, you did something different. Did you put protein in a 5-pound bucket before everyone, like Optimum? That was different. They were a knockoff brand forever, okay? That was a pivot point in the whole industry. They decided to do that, right? And they were actually dropping their own protein. They had just started. But you can knock that product, but for a value, it's great. So you have to almost take a step back and go, why are people liking this? Because it's easy to go, well, their proteins, let's say, aren't as good as ours. We're using a sure you are. But they might be going, I want to give a consumer the highest quality protein for the best price. That's their so what. Don't knock them for it. Understand what that is. If you can't compete there, fine.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just, I think, being aware that there's options out there and there's more than one way to grab market share. It isn't, I have the best product. I have the unicorn.
One of the things I always said to executives in this particular space, in the CPG space, was, well, you know, if they were the people who were knocking things, and say, well, if you knock them and they disappear in a month or two, you are right. If you're knocking them for a couple of years, they're still making money. Right. So think about it. And people would look at you and be like, huh? Like, well, if you've been shitting on that brand because you don't like them, but you've been doing it for a couple of years, they're still in the marketplace, which means people are buying it. Yeah. So, like, you got to know, you know, if you rag on someone and they're gone in a week, okay.
You were right. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it also holds true. It's like looking at somebody and what they're doing for just a short period of time and going, that's the answer. It's like, hold on a second. You don't know if they're blowing money yet. It's like the, you know, the executive that goes, you know, I think we should just, or you're in finance, you're a marketer, and they say, yeah, I think you should just cut back on that ad campaign. It's not really doing anything. It's like, okay, but how do you know that that ad spend isn't keeping us from declining more? You don't know that yet. So don't just look at it as like a savings. Be patient. Take the money away, or maybe drop some of it, or maybe cut it all out. Watch what happens. You don't know, you know, you can't just say, I'm saving the money. I didn't do any marketing. I never did any trade shows. Look at all the money I saved, right? It's like, yeah, sales are going down, but we're saving. So there's a lot of elements to look at. But, you know, I know I didn't answer your question about you need a product that you can have a story that will be true, right? And a lot of times it only takes, you know, a combination of ingredients we know will work, right? We know creatine works. We know protein, extra protein works. We know some of these things work, right? Put it in a fair price and that story around it, and you got to get it out there. You got to get people to buy into, yeah, this is the best product for this price, or it's the best flavor, right? There's something to that. And then, you know, you have to have a mechanism to get the product to people. Now it's easy to do direct, but which is great, but there's still a lot of sales being done in brick and mortar, even during coronavirus. You know, believe it or not, our industry got hit, especially like GNC, but, you know, it's interesting, I'm digressing again, but and all these people like this, like, you're probably familiar with it, there's like, everyone's going online, sure they are. But what happened when coronavirus hit? What did Amazon do? They had to hire 100,000 people. Why? Because they're only this much of the business. When you take all the stores away, that's why they're not selling a bunch of groceries yet, because it's hard, yeah. Right? A lot of that stuff is hard. So I would say I wouldn't give up on that either, right? If you have a small network or you know a distributor and you can get some access, there's plenty of brands that pick a small chain or one online partner and just made a success at one place. If it's your own site and maybe one other site, right? Mm-hmm. Keep it small. But success gets you the opportunity for more success. One of the biggest problems brands get when they're big is like, oh, let's put it everywhere. I think one of the things you wanted to ask me before was like, what's the biggest or worst advice? It's like these people, they get big and they're like, oh, it should be everywhere. Well, on a Walmart, Target, it's like, wait a minute. You don't even understand the buying situation that these consumers are in. That's why sports nutrition has always had trouble making it truly in mainstream, except bars and snacks. That's a lot easier, right? Why? Takes work. What was the saying we used to have at Weider? We had people we sold that were doers. They weight trained and did cardio and watched their diet. And there was dieters. There's doers or dieters. Dieters want a magic pill. They don't care about anything else. Just give me the thing that works. Lose my water. Give me energy. Right? The other one, they want a plan. It's two different psychologies. People that are just walking through the grocery store that aren't just going to take sales from where you were already selling it, mm-hmm. are very hard to convince because they don't really, they're not active enough.
I always reference body armor. I mean, I know one of the guys who worked on their, in their business for a long time, marketing, whatever. Yeah. Like he was like, look, he's like, body armor wasn't, as a protein brand, wasn't Walmart. He's like, we weren't trying to be the Mr. Olympia fuel. We were trying to be the person who buys a thing of body armor, puts it on their fridge, uses it once a month, and works out like three times a month. He's like, that was the plan. He's like, because it was $15.99. He's like, 100%. But they would buy a new tub every couple of months. So in a year, they spent $50, $60. He's like, but we had 5 million of those people.
That's huge. Right. And that's the kind of calculation you need to be able to, you know, either get to, or, you know, if you can get somebody with a little bit of experience and ask some questions, you know, it's one of the things that we did a lot of at Quest. We brought a lot of consultants in for different things because we wanted other opinions. Yeah. Like, I don't know if we have this figured out yet. How would you do it? How would you approach it? You know, we're going to get into this area. Like, how would you do it? If you ran the department, what would you do? And we, a lot of our key hires were that, because you have an idea. But a lot of times somebody's got the rash on their knees because they got scuffed up, and they can tell you where some of the blind spots are, right? Because a lot of it looks easy. Oh, yeah, like when I started as a distributor, I was like, oh, we'll buy this stuff. We'll have it sold in no time. I had no idea where I was selling it. I'm lucky. I was lucky, right? But I didn't have a plan. Oh, I got 100 accounts. It's like, I had no idea. So anyway.
So great transition from that one. What is the worst advice or most consistent worst advice you've gotten over your entire career that you hear in the supplement industry?
You know, one of them is, it's not even advice. It's that this stuff is for everyone. It's like, yeah, you know, we got the fitness people, but man, how can we get everyone? It's like, wait, hold on a second. First of all, you guys know this. There's new fitness people, and now it's like the house nowadays. I mean, imagine, I started a long time ago, and it's been growing ever since I started, right? Now we're at like crazy time, right? Where way more people are looking at food labels and all that. And so it's like crazy. So you can make a gigantic business just on new entrants into fitness. Why would you want to go and just say, I'm okay for you, soccer mom? Which is fine if you can get there. It's icing on the cake. But there's always new people coming in this fitness store, and they're way more inclined to be rabid and religious about it because that's what gets you results in the beginning. We've all done it, right? You've tried, and luckily we all started young, but there's a time when someone says, you know, this time I'm actually going to do it. I'm going to watch what I eat. I'm going to get some supplements. I'm going to go to the gym, and they're in. And if they get a little bit of progress, they think everything's magic. Those supplements are great. Oh my God, my trainer's greater. It's unbelievable, gym. And one of those people equals 1,000 others. That's why when people are like, yeah, I'm going to go to Walmart next year, I was like, well, I was saying the Quest guys, they just didn't know. They're like, oh, there's more people. It's like, true. But those people aren't, they're not going to Walmart to look for a nutrition bar. It's a maybe. Nice to have, right? So you really have to have a foundation. That's why I love, you know, the dietary supplements combined with the fitness aspect, right? Which is, you know, there's a level of commitment there that makes that consumer just inherently better. You know, we used to say when people were asking me, like, what magazines are the best to advertise with? I said, well, the data shows me Muscle and Fitness. And they're like, why? I go, it's a more serious newbie. Mm-hmm. They're new. They're reading. But they actually like the ads because they're learning about supplements. Versus Men's Health back in the day had way more circulation. So cologne, cars, right? It's not much exercise stuff. It's very light and fluffy. And you could get a million circ with Rodale, and you got way less with Muscle and Fitness, but your money went way further. Yeah. Because they're not looking for your stuff. And a lot of marketers try to go, let's go the alternative route. It's like, I'm all for that. But just remember, there's a reason why there's no supplement ads in like a rifle magazine. Yeah. Because they're not looking for it. Right? And that's one thing I will say is I've heard a lot of people, like when I first got to EAS, they went in Sports Illustrated. Before I signed on, I'm like, what are you guys doing? I'm like, oh, it's sports people. I'm like, but they're not looking for supplements at all. So they completely like made a wrong connection. It wasn't their fault. It's on for a layman, you're like, yeah, these people like the, you know, they're fit, but they're not. It's like signing on for UFC, you know, because I was very close to that, a lot of that stuff, and because of the old owners. And I told Lorenzo Pacina, it's like, he's like, you know, I got these guys, 18 to 34 demographic, it's just, I'm killing it. I go, but you have to prove to me that if I spend money with you, right, because you have X amount of viewers, okay? Out of those viewers, how many of those people work out? Okay, because you know there's a lot of spectators. It's like WWE, but maybe just different, right? So, and there's a lot of brands that try to do WWE over the years that never work. Because it's a spectator sport, right? So I'm like, you have a lot of spectators, okay? You have to convince me, right, that your additive to the people that are watching your events, that are reading Muscle and Fitness, Flex, or whoever at the time, right? Or going online, or going to bodybuilding.com. Are you additive to that? Are you just, are those people already in there and they already have better sources of information and they're cheaper? Do I need to give you $2 million a year like BSN did? Because every sports brand that did their deal stopped because it didn't work. It sounds great and it's good for PR, but I just think there's way too many, there's no participants compared to the amount of viewers, right? Which is, it's not their fault. They found their home. They've got Monster and light, you know, beers and stuff like that. They you know, but supplements, you know, because Muscle Farm tried to do it. It's just, it's really hard.
Yep.
So those sometimes are a mismatch where it seems obvious. Like, oh my God, we get fighters. It'd be great. Yeah, they're eating chicken wings.
Yeah.
Especially the people watching with the Affliction shirts and screaming in the bars. Yeah.
It's the perfect Yeah. We did it at Quest. We were talking, we were going down some of that road. One of the big things we did there, we went to CrossFit, which is a good fit. But when we had people like, we were going to get the advocates for the brand, my main thing was, what do they eat? Are they interested in nutrition? Like, and we weren't a vegan company. So if they're vegan, then it's not a fit, right? Is their philosophy line up with us? You know, some of the best advocates for a brand, obviously Jim's like at the top of the list, right? Because he lives it, you see it. Labrada was actually good, better than, at least in the, certainly in the beginning, than Ronnie. Why? if you were following bodybuilding back in the late 80s, early 90s, Lee was known as a very meticulous guy with his diet. So it made sense. I'm going to listen to that guy because he was really particular about it. Now, Ronnie's a kind of another thing. The first thing that comes to mind is that he's meticulous with his diet. Not for me. Maybe. But to your point, a lot of that is, it does that person really represent the ethos of what you're selling, right? And that's why it's hard for celebrities to sell supplements, because you don't think of, oh, you're a formulator. Someone's not a formulator, right? We would go to trade shows and people are like, oh, there's Rocky. It's like, he's a character.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of brands, there's a lot of advice that comes from trying to take our business and stretch it before its time, right? It's growing and growing and growing. And we're seeing things like Quest Bar and the big acquisitions. And, you know, Powerbar was sold in the 98 for $471 million. Nestle bought it. But, you know, they never got back in the health food store. And they never grow. So you can see that as an example. If you're relying on the mainstream people, it's very difficult.
Yeah.
If you're relying on people who are like, you know what? I need 3 trays of Quest bars because I eat these every day because I watch my diet all the time. And I spend a lot of my disposable income on supplements. It's a great customer. You have to get thousands of those to make one. Mm-hmm. I mean, Quest Bar was built on fitness girls. They were told by their coach, you can eat Quest bars.
No, that makes total sense. And I remember that being a huge market you guys picked up on for sure.
Right. Especially and there's people that
were starting to grow.
Right. The interesting thing was, you know, my buddy set up all the distribution. I remember him calling me. He's like, before I started with them, he's like, man, you know, these people don't like these things. I go, I love them. I go, remember, because there was a couple of distributors that turned Quest Bar down. And after the fact, they were so mad. Right. Because they're like, oh my God. But I said, they're comparing it to a Snickers, which a lot of the bars had morphed into, like, you know, a pseudo candy, right? It happens all the time. Someone cleans a bar up, and then over time, the bars get dirtier again, and then all the fitness people go, I can't even eat a bar anymore. It's junk. And then someone does it again, right? And that's what Quest did. They basically re-engineered the pure protein bar, which for a while, those bars were good. Until people realize they're a bunch of glycerin, sugar, alcohol, bad protein, collagen, right? And then I don't really want to. But I was going to say I told my buddy Mike, I'm like, you got to tell these people, you're selling to a person that eats broccoli and chicken every meal. This tastes like a hot dog sundae to them, right? It's all relative.
Yep.
Don't grade it against a pizza. Or a Snickers. It's not what your competition is. Your competition is someone who's really dieting.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you absolutely crushed. That's perfect. So we asked the same 3 questions to everybody, and I'm definitely curious to see what you have to say about these. The first one is, how do you manage your own personal time and then keep balance, right? So when you picked up the phone today or got onto the call with us, you've just been talking to Jim. You were kind of figuring out some issues you guys had to sort out. How do you find that balance between work and life?
Well, I mean, I'm lucky in a sense because, you know, my hobby is training and nutrition. You know, this is kind of like, not nutrition's a hobby, but it's been a kind of a thing. And so, I'm kind of around my work a lot, right? But yeah, I do, you know, I like to read different types of books. I'm really into business books, other industries, right? And learning, I told the guys at Quest one time, I said, you know, when I look at a toaster or if I look at an ad for any other industry, I see fitness. And how can I take that? What was good about that ad or that product or that packaging or that messaging? And how could we use that in what we do? So you're kind of always learning. So, but we're in California. So going to the beach, getting out. My daughter just started working with Jim. She's working with, you know, some gym athletes and stuff. So she's really into it. So I get to see her here. And so that breaks it up a little bit.
Nice.
But yeah, my work is really not work. So most of your audience is, you know, I got lucky. Trust me. Really lucky.
Very nice. No, I mean, that's the dream, right? Like you turn your passion and your hobby into your career. So every day, you know, people say it different ways, but It's like every day you wake up, you're not going to work. You're just having fun.
I mean, I get up every day. And like, I'm like, I know there's going to be problems, but I get to learn.
Yeah.
All right.
Shifting gears on you, right? Yeah. Question number two. What is the best thing you have ever spent $500 or less on? Open question. And that can be business, personal, professional, you know, just open question. What comes to your mind?
Ooh, wow. I think it was less than 500 to incorporate back in 88. So I think that was probably a good buy.
Okay.
That was a lucky buy. It wasn't intended to be that good of a buy.
Nice.
All right, last question. Who coaches you and why them specifically, right? We always talk about sharpening our sword, making sure you're good at what you do and making sure that the people around you can help raise you to the next level. So who coaches you, whether it's business coaching, you know, actually coaching you physically or coaching you for other things you're interested in, and why?
You know, I've been training a long time and I did all that competing, but I actually watch Jim's videos because I'm not the super exercise fizz guy. And so I get a lot of, I get a kick out of looking at different stuff that he's done because I can still learn, right? I was like, you know, cause you know, I've been training, you've got certain hand positions and stuff, especially if you're a bodybuilder, right? You got quirky stuff because you got your anatomy you're dealing with. But I always like to look at his stuff. As far as business, you know, there's a lot of the people out there recently. I get a kick out of listening to and reading a guy named Scott Galloway, Professor Galloway. He's a branding and marketing professor at NYU. And he does a lot of work with teaching people or coaching people on branding and marketing. And he's got a lot of real world examples because I don't know if you guys know that a lot of the NYU professors, they encourage them to be, be in business. So, right. So he interviews a lot of the guys that are actually in the faculty, but he brings up these amazing people. And he's got a really, really rich background in branding. And so I get a lot of information from him, and if he recommends somebody, you know, for years I went to like Seth Godin, you know, Purple Cow and those, very good. But generally, you know, marketing people and not really a coach, I guess, as far as that goes. But I have my go-to people. And, you know, one of the best pieces of advice I read was if it was a really good book, reread it. So I always like new books, but I always go back to stuff and I'm like, when you read something again, even a chapter, like, I didn't get that last time. Like, where's my head? So you need to get a lot more.
Vince, bonus question.
Yeah.
What's the book you've reread the most?
Oh, the book I reread the most. Well, you know, it's probably the retread. It was Ogilvy on Advertising.
Yeah.
David Ogilvy.
Cool. Vince, appreciate it. It was nice to meet you, even though this is in the digital COVID world. You know, one day, hopefully we get to do this in person, you know, eating some food while talking shop. You know,
yeah, that'd be great.
I'm a food guy. You know, Matt will buy the steaks and bring the drinks and we'll just indulge. So
that sounds great.
Yeah. So
yeah. No, some of these events come back, you guys going to get out? Maybe we'll meet.
Yep. Sure. Yeah, no, That's the plan.
That's the goal right there.
So one of the things before we close it out, how can people find you? You know, where can they go? We obviously, when we talked to Sheets, you know, we referenced Dapani and the brand and everything, but you know, what if someone's looking for you because they can obviously find you there. And just like we did with Tim, they can find Tim there, but how do they find you outside of just that?
You can go to LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Vince Andrich, I could send you that, or you could go to andrichfitness.com. Mm-hmm. The easiest probably to go LinkedIn.
Cool. And I always take notes. If you notice, I'm looking down, I'm scribbling on my notepad. So writing this down to make sure that whenever we put this out, you know, all that stuff will be in the notes and the links and everything, and we'll have ways for people to find you. Powell's making a joke right now. So Rocket Book, there's another one for you. I use a specific type of notebook.
I go through all kinds of organizing tools. We can have a whole show on that.
Exactly.
That's a hobby of mine.
Yep. Maybe.
And my sister used to say, "You got a new calendar, huh?"
I'm like, "Hey, Vince, yeah, if you haven't tried Rocketbook, Vince, you write in it, you scan it into your phone. It's amazing. Awesome. Rocketbook sponsor.
Okay, right on. I believe you.
Shameless plug, but no. So thank you. This was great. Hey guys, we're coming up on Thanksgiving in the year of COVID. So enjoy the holiday. Be well. Be safe. And then, Vince, I can't thank you again. Have a great night.
You got it, guys. Thanks again.
Thanks, Vince. Yeah.
Bye.
See you guys.